Hello, and welcome to the Mentor Dino podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Rossier. I am an architect and founder of Mentor Dino. Join me each week as I speak with amazing professionals in and around the architecture, engineering, and construction industry, as we are all part of a larger interconnected community. We discuss everything from career stories, lessons learned, and advice for others finding their own unique career path. Thank you to all of our current subscribers, and if you're new, welcome to the conversation. And if you like this episode, please do me a favor by hitting subscribe, like, or share it with a friend. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support them on their own unique career journey. On this episode of the Mentor Dino podcast, I want to talk about storytelling and how important it is to be able to tell stories and explain your work, not only as a completed project, as those experience architecture, but along the way, whether it is winning work, talking to clients, talking to individuals that don't know how to read a floor plan, or it's their first time doing a project. It is so crucial at every step in the way that architects know how to tell stories and explain things in different ways and different words. That's not just archie speak that we are told that we need to know in studio and when we have conversations with other architects, but really it's those conversations with everybody that's not an architect and being able to have an intelligent conversation that is meaningful and impactful to them as well as yourself. So in this episode, I want to highlight three different forms of storytelling and different avenues from three guests I've had so far on the podcast. And the first one, instead of working on images that we're always so worried about, renderings, images, what images you show in your portfolio or your website, this time I want to focus on words. Because words and how you speak about your work can tell a very dynamic story. So this one, I want to introduce you to Nikita Morel. She was episode number 67 and my first episode of 2025. And she is a copywriter for architects, and she is out of Sydney, Australia. And so in this episode, I'll be clipping out to joining her newsletter and how engaging her newsletter is. It's not just standard salesy, here's an update. It's actual stories every time, which is what really makes it engaging and capturing and captivating to her audience. But she really helps those with their website, branding, talking about themselves. So architects are very good at talking to other architects, but sometimes aren't so good at speaking about their work to clients and getting more clients when using the words that they find impactful. So I hope you enjoy this little clip from Nikita Morel's episode, and she's always there to help if you're looking to revamp your website. Once I start looking at the really large firms, I feel like their websites are more like a retention recruitment tool rather than going after owners, whereas the small and medium firms are actually using it to generate business. I'm not sure if you've seen it that way or if you've helped. How's that larger firm versus small firm dynamic?
Yeah. And you've really summarized it well, because a lot of clients, the small firms come to me and they say, oh, we want, you know, a website, and then they'll name some architect or something. And I say, that's great. But the thing is, with those bigger firms, they've already got that brand equity. People already know their name. They've already got that reputation. They've got that trust. So they can use it as a recruitment tool. Whereas for firms who may not have that brand awareness, people don't know who they are, that's where really your website is a trust builder. Because a lot of architects come to me and they say, well, Nikita, all my work's coming through word of mouth. Like, do I really need a website? And I say, well, unfortunately, everyone's Googling you. I mean, you're probably Googling yourself. So you do need to have at least a website that is building up that credibility and trust. So if they've got multiple tabs open, yours is memorable, and they're just stopping at yours and they're going, okay, I really want to work with these guys. Like, no matter how much they cost, I'm going to try and make it work, because they're invested in your firm and they already feel that sense of trust before they've met you. So yeah.
Yeah. And I think trust is an important part, because it's all actually trust and relationships and less on the design. Not to say that design's not important, but for those clients and bringing in repeat clients, if you're not trustworthy, they're not going to come back to you.
Exactly.
So, have you heard any feedback from previous architect clients that have had a boost or a change in their work after updating their website copy?
Yeah, So I do often, I have like a little reminder in my calendar. So after around 6 to 12 months, I'll touch base and I'll be like, okay, what's happening? Because, you know, it's not something that you put a website live and then the next day you start getting results. It's, you know, it's one of those things that kind of takes time. But a lot of architects, the biggest piece of feedback is after I've written their copy, they just say they're getting a lot more like inquiries from better fit clients. So ones that are more aligned with their values, and, you know, doing things like on your about page saying, we like to work alongside clients who respect design, or just something very simple like that. You're almost immediately filtering out those people who are just there to kind of, you know, haggle your prices, or they just want a quick quote or something. So you want, a lot of those architects that come to me, they want to attract the right types of people. They don't want to waste their time. So yeah, that's one of the best pieces of feedback that I often get, because it means that the copy is doing its job.
Yeah. And I think it's important that you highlighted the 6 to 12 months afterwards, because I feel like we're in such a time where everything needs to be immediate. Like all of our project schedules are getting faster and we wish we had more time to get our projects designed before they go to the contractor, but everything takes time. I know even doing my own copy and learning about SEO and understanding it takes months for it to really take hold. Yeah. Is important. Do you find you have to educate architects as much as the copy itself, but what that does from an SEO and the actual dynamics of web searches?
Yeah, like I have to definitely educate them. But then even again, like the copy on my website's obviously working because I'm getting a lot more architects coming through my door who already understand that. So I am finding that I need to do that less and less. And I think something that comes from updating your website copy or having at least copy that reflects who your firm is now is that the confidence of the firm also increases. So they start putting their name and, you know, they start entering awards and that because they're not embarrassed, because a lot of architects come to me and like, I haven't updated it in 5 years, it's a mess or whatever. But I think just by making certain changes to your messaging, you feel that confidence and you do put it out there more, and so you see those results.
Yeah, because I can definitely tell when websites haven't been updated in decades. Yes. In some instances, even with when I was graduating from college and looking at websites, if a website was very old looking and hasn't been updated, it's like, okay, if they haven't updated their website in decades or however long I've been alive, like how up to date are they are with project standards or changes in the industry, and just making sure it's light and refreshed.
Exactly.
So, but it doesn't have to be starting over. I think if you've got good copy, it's, hey, change some of the brand colors or rearrange things. Once the good copy is there, you can reuse words in so many different ways.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And I wanted to dive into your newsletter as something even on the Mentor Dino side where I try to run a newsletter and try to keep up. And I am always entertained by your newsletters and how fresh they are. And I don't know how you do it and keep up, because every time I try my newsletters, then I run out of time to keep up. So can you tell me a little bit about your newsletter, what you write in it, and how that, I guess, could potentially help other businesses if architects want to start writing newsletters for their owners?
Yeah, oh, thank you. Thank you for the kind words. But it's like one of the parts of my business that I love doing. My newsletter is not like other newsletters, as if you're on the list, you will know. I do really treat it like a letter, like a newsletter, rather than try and, you know, talk about or teach at architects. I love sharing stories from my own personal life or things that have happened, and like kind of weave it in. And I actually created an entire course called Email Newsletters in 1 hour for architects to show them exactly how you can approach your newsletter in a way that it doesn't feel so scary. So for example, with my newsletters, I don't date it, or I don't say, oh, it's a monthly newsletter. It's nothing like that. It's when I feel like it, I write it and I send it out when I have something to say. So I feel like that pressure's taken off, but I don't feel like, you know, there's a deadline coming and I need to just fill it with something. So if I don't have anything to say, you know, I'll leave it a few weeks, even a month sometimes. And then if I have an idea I want to develop or I want to, you know, share with my audience, then I'll go and do it. So I think, yeah, I share all that approach. I share kind of ideas in that kind of 1 hour course, but yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. And I know I definitely feel that pressure with the deadlines of it. It's like, oh crap. If I'm trying to do weekly or monthly, even if it is monthly, it's, oh my gosh, it's already the end of the month. Like you hit a couple project deadlines during the month and all of a sudden a whole 30 days has gone by and pulling things together. And I know we even talked about you took some time off for your fourth child and trying to adjust. And I know even small firm owners have those struggles with, okay, having a family, if they're a solopreneur, and being able to take those breaks and give yourself grace. So I don't know if you have any advice for that since your most recent child was very recent. So
I think the biggest thing is like, I feel like it's even with websites when you hit live or launch, you know, you feel like it's the biggest thing because you've been working on it. Same with newsletters. No one, I mean, from my experience, no one's really tracking when you send it off. 3 weeks and they haven't sent me a newsletter. No one, I think about how busy our inboxes are. So I think the main thing is just every time you do put something out there, you know, it is of the highest quality, give it your best. And that's it. Like, don't feel that pressure. That's, you know, having a family is, it's unpredictable. You never know what each day is going to, you know, unravel, or there's going to be a sick kid or what. So I think it's just giving you, as you said, that grace to yourself and realizing that no one's really paying that much attention, which sounds horrible, but it makes us feel better. So
exactly.
All right. Now I want to talk about storytelling from a business development side. So again, not focusing on pictures. Yes, I'm still focusing on words this time, but this time the spoken word. And so I want to talk to you guys about Jenky De Palma. It was episode number 69, and she is on the business development side for a construction company. And so in her episode, we talk a lot about networking, business development, being able to tell a story, not only from your work side, but your team side and that person-to-person contact and building up that trust in your network to get the next project work along the way. So again, storytelling isn't just about the words you write on a piece of paper, your website, or the image on your portfolio. It can be how you are as a person, and you can be captivating as you wish. So I hope you guys enjoy this clip from Jenky's conversation.
It's a really key lesson, you know, wherever you are in your career, that like you can only control what you can control.
Yeah. And just try to be helpful and valuable and
yeah, while keeping your sanity and, you know, maintaining boundaries and all those kind of good things, right?
Sanity is the hard part.
Boundaries are the tougher one for me, but
and I know, so you've done business development on an engineering side, an architecture side, and now the contractor side. So you've been on so many different angles of the industry. So how does everything kind of tie together for you in those relationships? Because we all work together on projects. So what's it like on your end?
I mean, it's funny because a lot of people would ask me that because I spent most of my time on the design side, right? So a consultant and then architect. And it's still the same thing. We're all working together to get a project done, right? To build, in most cases, build a building, right? So all you're doing in business development is building and maintaining relationships. And ultimately, people want to work with people that they know, like, and trust. And my role is to help kind of like move people along that way, because it gets really easy to get caught up in sort of the minutia of the actual project, like when you're in the trenches, and then forget that, oh yeah, we actually like these people and we all want to go home. I mean, most of us want to be able to be proud of a project. I think that is really what, I mean, yes, billables count and, you know, making a profit count, but ultimately we all want to be able to like point to a project and tell someone we care about that we worked on it. And that's kind of what we all, you know, as a collective want. So that's something I think is really important to always keep in mind, that even when we're kind of, you know, in the throes of a difficult part of the project, you know, like in CA or you're trying to VE a project or something like that, you're ultimately trying to get the same thing, you know, trying to find a win-win situation. And that's a lot of what I'm trying to do, is to kind of smooth the process during and then help, obviously, in the early stages to help, you know, identify and create those relationships.
Yeah. So where, if I think of the life of a project, so the design team tends to start a lot earlier than the contractor, for the most part, if you think of it commercial wise, where does BD happen within that kind of timeline?
We always want, I think everyone wants to be further left, right? Yep. In the continuum, like you want to, as an architect, you want to get in early. Everyone wants to get in earlier. The contractor wants to get in early. I love it if we can get in when the project is just a glimmer in somebody's eyes, right? You know, because then we can give input and ideas and help people live in reality. So for BD, that's the same thing. I mean, we want to get, you want to be making relationships early, before people might even, like, ideally even before they're thinking about the project, because we want to build relationships, not chase projects.
Yep.
And I think that's a really key differentiator, is that you're not looking at a, let's say, a school district and waiting for them to be, you know, going after a bond and then because they're going to do a $200 million high school. You want to be part of that team way before and like helping them in all kinds of ways. So you're doing a lot of projects for that district, right? Or for a developer or anything like that. So that as early as possible, like you really, you know, like I think the best things are the ones where it's like a relationship where maybe somebody was, you know, like an architect and then they left architecture and went to become a developer. And then they still remember how great it was to interact with us as people. And they call on us because they're thinking about it. Like they're pulling together their squad of helpers.
Yeah. And building out to relationships rather than just sending out a blanket RFP sometimes.
It's all relationships. It's all it is. Think about it. Like if you're going to do something tough, you're going to pull together the people you trust who are going to help you. They're going to tell you what's going to bite you in the behind. They're going to take this as seriously as you take it. Right. They're going to be kind, but tell you the truth. Right. Think about like anything you're doing in your life. So it's the same thing, you know, whether you're a developer, whether you're a school district, whatever it is, you want to gather people who are going to tell you all the things that you don't know. You don't know.
Exactly. And speaking of that, I know when I started my career, I had no idea the business development world even existed. And we had a business development person in the office and it was like, what does he do? He's off in his office, he's on calls, but you don't really learn the business side of architecture and architecture school. So it is, what are you doing? What's going on? So do you have a good way of explaining what business development is and what that role is to recent grads?
We talk about this a lot for some of the mentoring I do with either students, either in high school when I helped with ACE mentors, or then there's a college series that I help with for the Austin AIA Women in Architecture. And it's, I guess I'll mix a lot of metaphors, but basically sometimes what business development is doing is helping move people through that continuum, right? Do they know us? Do they like us? And do they trust us? And I think a lot of that is a bit like, now here's where the mixing of metaphors comes in. Think of me like a personal trainer. You may have the discipline to do your workout and all the reps and, you know, hit your goals. And that's great. And that is what a traditional doer seller was. And I think that's the model that a lot of us grew up with. A lot of times the name partners were doing that, right? Because they eat what they kill. So they are hustling and doing things. And then as a firm gets bigger, people just get really into their project, which is great. You know, they're doing the work they're paid for, but you know, do you have the time and thoughtfulness to create a plan to reach out to your current clients, the people who you might have fallen off with, like they're not current, but they know you, and new people. And sometimes you do, or sometimes, you know, in that same metaphor, you're like me and you look up and you're like, oh my goodness, it's 10:30 at night and I forgot to work out, right? I guess I'll do it tomorrow. Yeah. So it's the same thing. Like, do you have time? It may not happen unless you have someone who is there to like map that out for you. And that's where an in-house BD person comes in, because we're full-time doing this. And then we also create avenues where we can bring in people so we can, you know, tag team, you know, when it's appropriate. So it's not all on you trying to squeeze it in along with like a full day job.
All right. And welcome back. And this time, yes, I'll finally get to images and what it is to really tell a story through an image, per se. And this time I want to talk about videos. And it's so much about architecture that we've been told to do these fancy renderings, and everything is such a still image, and you're trying to grab movement along the way. And what architects need to do a little bit more of is telling their stories through captivating videos, because we aren't still in our projects, we experience and move through our space. And so if you can tell a story on your website or talking to a client through showing them a video, a movement, and not just, hey, the big quick walkthroughs you'll do for a client to win additional funding for their project. No, this is telling true honest stories of those who experience a space, utilize the space, the stories behind the architecture and behind the decisions and how it impacts everyone. So you probably guessed it. I want you guys to learn from Gus Burnell this time. He was episode number 40 and helps me on podcast editing and teaching me how to video edit along the way. So then I can use it on my project work and explaining projects to clients, because sometimes clients can't read a floor plan. Sometimes a still image isn't going to do it. So when can video really help you tell a story? And thinking of it through a lens of a short film or a movie rather than a book you read or a magazine article. It's all different forms of communication and storytelling along the way. So hope you guys enjoy this clip from Gus Burnell and think of storytelling a little bit differently through videos to showcase your projects.
But going more on the AI national side, I know you were part of a group of professionals that presented the power of storytelling, films, and architecture. What opportunities do you see architects are missing out if they're just using photos versus film to tell their project stories?
Well, first of all, AI National was amazing. I mean, I don't have to the word to describe this, especially for a non-architect, non-designer, or engineer. It was great to be there. A lot of people was so welcoming, and it was a great experience. This is my third time, not at the national, but talking about storytelling. I mean, I did it on AA Austin, the design conference, and then I did it in the TXA Society of Architects too, and now national. So this is the big leagues, just to make it to there and talk about the work. It was a great opportunity to discuss the direction of the industry and also talking about the work, how we portray the work of construction, architecture, and interior design and landscaping, and how we highlight who's doing the work and who basically enjoys the project or who is the user when you finish. In other words, yeah, like I said, the user. So it to me, it's been interesting how to do the storytelling. But going back to your question, first of all, I don't think photo is just a limitation. And I wanted to, you know, make it very clear. I think there are two different mediums. Photography is an excellent medium, and it's very challenging just to tell a story with one image. And, you know, you're frozen time just like that is daunting. And I try it. I mean, I've done some photography, but I don't know. So I think I'm great doing filmmaking. People ask me that question several times. I said, yes, I would love to take more photos, but you know, you hire people who are big leagues and they're amazing all the work they do. In fact, when I was in a national with Alexandra, I met Alan Karshmer, who is called the architect's photographer. And I was pretty honored that we bumped into him at the expo and he said, oh, you know, I'm going to your panel. And I said, what? That was to me, that was amazing to hear from him. And we went to his panel. We have a brief conversation about it, and we talk about both mediums and how both mediums own their own set of challenges, and how you have the ability to tell stories in so many different ways. So I think for architects, I think it's important that you need to tell stories, and this goes back to the main hook of our panel, which is how mass design decided. This is the hook that we have in our presentation, because they did a piece on 60 Minutes. And basically, they talk about that, you know, film is very important. You need to tell stories. You need to talk about the users. You need to talk about a process. That was a word that is so, so important. And it's great because now we see it more regularly. You see how people talk about the process. You see it on social media, even 15 seconds. Oh, let me show you this 15 second of how the construction is going, or basically a video like Tiny Pictures, how we basically were able to capture in 8 minutes what it's like to for an architecture firm create this micro home for a person who doesn't have a home. So everyone is interested in stories. And I think architects should embrace the ability to tell those stories and find ways to use it to their benefit. I've seen a lot of firms who do it. Other firms, I think there's, I have to say that it's a little bit of, people are nervous or they have some fear about the use of the technology. And I completely understand. I mean, for me, it was daunting just trying to understand how is the process of architects, but I was able to, you know, all these years to now find ways to translate every single thing that they wanted to do and put it on film. However, this is a great opportunity that they need to embrace. They need to find ways to, you know what, we need to tell this story. Mm-hmm. I think we need to talk about this person. And sometimes one thing that I always push is, okay, we need to talk to the architect. We need to talk to the client. We need to talk to the users. We need to talk to the landscaper, the engineers. Every single person involved in the process have a story to tell. Sometimes could be really fun anecdotes. And that's why I feel it is important. I'm in conversations with different firms about different projects, and I'm always trying to, my initial interviews are very interesting for them because they're asking, okay, so what do you want to know? It's like, any anecdotes? What do you find when you broke ground for the first time? Do you find something interesting? That will be the story. So stories move me in so many different ways, and how in architecture you can find those stories by, you know, looking to the details, looking to how this project started.
Yeah. And I think if the main design team stays on full time, you can take those stories that you learn from all those user meetings. Like, what was the purpose behind the project? What was the main thing the users are needing or wanting from the project? Or, you know, is there a big moment that you are creating new for them that they're going to experience? And then teaching people, like, I'm even thinking, like, hey, whoever's on site, do B-roll and know those important moments. And then you could almost build the B-roll for how the construction is to, like, the final. And, you know, being able to tell that story with different audio on top of it to, this is a new way for these couple users to come together and collaborate or heal. And then you see it in the final, and then you can do an anecdote at the end, like, thinking of that as you're designing, but then letting whoever is going to be on site know about it and teach them some minor video editing, or not even editing, just take the video. So then in the end, it's a whole series of things you can build together to create something, and you don't know where it's going to come from. But it's an education part. Or sometimes I miss taking videos or photos. So I'm like, crap, meant to do that.
I mean, it's hard for me too. Sometimes I go on a site and I'm producing, like, recording a video, and I give my phone to somebody. It's like, okay, please take some photos of me, record some videos of me, because I need that for storytelling purpose. I mean, it's not just what I'm capturing on camera. It's like what happened behind the camera. It's also mm-hmm. interesting to know. So, yeah.
And I learned a lot just hanging out with you at AIA National, because I got to see how you were pulling together different video clips to be able to create and share your story and your experience at the conference, and even be able to take videos of me that everybody will be able to see soon on social media with all the different things I post, but seeing how you captured me having conversations with people, you captured the essence of the event or different critical moments. I even learned just by watching you that I'm like, oh, okay, like this is what you're seeing. And I'm like, oh, he's taking video. Why is he taking a video? Okay. What am I looking at? What am I seeing? So it's a lot about learning design. You just kind of see from learning from others.
Yeah, the National was an interesting process because I wanted to do a chapter, an episode per day. So imagine what it was for me processing all those videos and then at night just making sure that the video was edited just to submit it to the Instagram the next day. And I still was able to compile all those days and one more video. And it said, this is insane that I'm, you know, you're basically collecting all the different events and happenings. But that's a storytelling. You're basically, how do you try to tell a story that happened in 4 days and 90 seconds for social media? That was hard, but it's possible.
And just the best advice I got whenever I was looking to start this podcast and the YouTube channel side of Mentor Dino was just start. Your first episode, your first video is not going to be your all-star product, but you're going to learn. And it's what's something new you can learn from each video, each experience. So you're always growing. And then you can look back, like I look back at my old videos and I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't do enough. I could have done this. Or like you think of it differently. And so now I'm like, oh, okay, what ones can I redo and do a different way, a different lens? And just take things you've learned to fix and modify.
But it happens to film directors too, how they go back. It's like, oh, I'm just going to use some computerized thing and I'm just going to erase this. It's like, no, it's finished. Let's finish it. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any advice for architects learning the video production language and capturing their stories?
Well, I think you answered part of that question is first, you need to do it. You need to do it. You need to embrace it. I think people are too wrapped around the fear of, oh, I'm not getting too many likes. This is something that I've been learning for the past few years is, I'm not interested on making a viral video. And this is how society is pushing those limits of you. And you're thinking, oh, I need to make this video that have 1 million likes. And sometimes you're not going to get that. And I think my biggest advice is, you know, do it, try it, and see the results, because that's how people react to that kind of content. And, you know, we keep experimenting. I'm always trying to, you know, experiment with times, where the photos or where the videos will be posted, at what time, which medium, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, you know, different mediums, the length. I didn't know how powerful it is when you choose a song for a video. What song are you using and why you're using this specific song, or which songs are trendy and which songs are not trendy. So I think it's a lot of experimentation. So you don't be afraid of the medium. Try to use all the tools. I mean, now we have, you know, video editing apps that literally can do a lot of things for you on your phone. There's a lot of potential. Take a leap of faith and, take those risks, especially I feel that it's important when you, I think some people are afraid of, you know, taking the risk and then, you know, it's like, okay, I have a regret for not doing it. That's in a professional way. Personally, it's a different thing when you decided, oh yeah, I'm just going to take this risk because if I don't do it, it's not going to happen again. But professionally, it's important to take risk, with your resources and see what, and you can have to create something that is easier. You can create something easy. It's not, you're not making a feature film for Instagram. You're just, or for LinkedIn, you're making a video that highlights what you've been working on.
Yeah. And I think a good example is even that 3-minute video you created for the video challenge with the AIA, and you're like, I didn't do this justice. I need to do it a different way. editing it again and then doing it the way you thought it needed to be done right, and then seeing all the awards it's gotten, like just kind of reinventing the wheel and testing it.
Yeah.
Has the, with like WIA and the profile series, have they, I don't know if you know if they've gotten any different like social media engagement with the video content being added in?
From what I know, yeah, from what I know is, you know, that's another thing. When you using social media to tell stories, you need to, you know, experiment different places. Sometimes Alexandra said things like, oh, we got a lot of views on LinkedIn more than Instagram, or vice versa. We don't have a lot of control over AA Austin YouTube channel, so we don't know exactly, I mean, what is the traction there? We see that the amount of viewers, but I know that LinkedIn has been very successful for that. And I think is also the strategy, because we as videos are about 5 to 7 minutes long. You know, we know that there's some target audience who their attention span is not to watch 7 minutes of video. So the strategy was to create teasers, which is about 1 minute long, or sometimes 1 minute and 10 seconds long. And those are being very successful. Those are very helpful because basically drive the audience to watch the full video. They're interested. Mm-hmm. Also, there's a compilation video that is being produced at the end of the year with unused questions and answers. So those are those cost, you know, get a lot of traction too. Because people, you know, are thirst to know more about these people. And in fact, thanks to, I think Profiles 2023, thanks to that one, people got inspired and they decided to do a dinner series with basically interview some of the people who are in the videos. And they talk about more, people wanted to do more beyond the videos. So I think is sometimes it's how you use the medium and how you, repurpose the medium. And it's interesting because now I can see that as a pattern. Also, you know, you see a national with future focus, which is a series that, and it's been, you know, so well produced. We were able to meet people from the AI Minnesota and the AI National, and they created the FAIA Legacy Project. And this is, those are also great projects. These ones are like documentaries about fellows. Female fellows. And of course, you know, now the perspectives series from the AA Pittsburgh. So, and with AA Pittsburgh, because I'm getting like a really good working relationship with the leadership. When with the videos finished, and I said, would you mind if we make a teaser so we can just put it on social media to drive people to the YouTube channel? And they said, yes, let's do it. And then I did a teaser, like a 1 minute thing. So people can just, you know, this is like, okay, this is a minute of what you're missing if you don't watch this episode. So those are strategies work.
Yeah. And I've seen, even watching my own stuff, I always find it fun to see what episodes, like, people gravitate towards YouTube versus listening to just the audio, and then LinkedIn versus Instagram are kind of the main two social media platforms. And it's kind of fun to see what ones do well or do differently. And it's always so hard to predict, but I don't know. It's fun to just like watch the data. I'm a data junkie. So it's not like I'm trying to get every episode to beat the one before that, but it's just seeing who's listening. And it's like, oh, because we talk, at least I get to talk to guests, and I'm not just talking to a wall when I do this podcast. Yeah. But just seeing other people listen and curious to different lives, and, you know, hearing the stories we're able to pull out.
Yeah. In other words, I mean, this is basically a 1 hour journey, kind of like a 1 hour journey where basically we're telling a story and you're basically navigating the story and asking questions to get more answers and get more, you know, information from how I do things. So what is important to me as a filmmaker.
All right. And I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation about storytelling and how storytelling is more than just images and renderings you put out on your portfolio or website. It's really the words that you choose to captivate your audience and the types of words based on who you're trying to tell the story to. I don't want to tell the same story to a senior architect as I do a high school student, as I want to talk to a toddler. They're all different. We need to change how we tell our stories in different lights. So hopefully the words Nikita taught you on copywriting can help you with your website and getting more work in that sense. Janky helped you learn how to talk to professionals all around the AEC industry, as well as your clients, in telling stories from a business development and networking lens. And hopefully Gus has talked you into upping your storytelling by showcasing it through video rather than just still works of art, as architecture can be. Let's showcase what architecture is, and it's the experiential part of the environment and the people within those spaces and how we utilize them. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode on storytelling. I hope you enjoyed our discussion today. Learn some advice to take with you and see how our industry is all tied together to create the world around us. Check out the description below for any links or resources we discussed. If you liked the episode, please do me a favor and hit the subscribe button. Give me a thumbs up and leave a comment below. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support finding that career path that best works for them. If you know someone that has inspired your own career that you'd like me to interview, let me know in the comments below, or you can reach out to me via my website or LinkedIn. I'd be happy to share their story or your own. Thank you again, and I cannot wait for the next career story I get to share with you next week.